You've just landed inside Launch Street, the innovation podcast, where we interview top innovators out there shaking things up so you can innovate and differentiate
and get further faster in this crazy cluttered world.
And now, innovation thought leader
and your super fly host,
Tamara Kleinberg.
All right, everybody, super excited for today. I am here with Melissa Gonzalez, and I actually reached out to her because I heard her on a podcast, and I thought that her expertise were so valuable to our community that I wanted to have her on. So she is a retail strategist and pop-up architect. She is the CEO of the Lionesque Group and author of The Pop-Up Paradigm, How Brands Can Build Human Connections in a Digital Age. I think something we all need. Mm-hmm. Following a period where Gonzalez juggled both a Wall Street career at Credit Suisse and co-hosted BET's Latin Beat, she has become the go-to retail and pop-up architect for brands looking to either launch their brand, test new markets, or insert their brand into strategic conversations. Beginning with a vision of the branded experience, Melissa guides clients throughout the entire life cycle of the pop-up experience. She and her team have produced over 100 pop-up stores since 2009, probably some that I've been to, so I'm kind of excited to dig in. She's also the chief pop-up architect, 22 City Link, Virginia's first ever smart city, and is the co-founder of The Market at the Roger Smith Hotel, a renovated and innovative space for pop-up retail, which has grown from 1 to 4 storefronts since inception in 2010. Outside of helping clients exceed their goals, she's a regular contributor on ABC LA Radio and is one of IBM's retail futurists. She's been awarded Retail Touchpoints 2015 Retail Innovator of the Year, the Wall Street Journal's Donor of the Day, one of the top 20 most inspiring people in New York City, and one of the top 100 young CEOs via Our Time's White House Initiative. Her clients' works have been awarded the Clio Image for Experiential Engagement and the New York Design Award for Branded Experiences. Now, I don't know if everybody in our community knows what all those things mean, but I do because I used to work in advertising on Madison Avenue, and it's pretty impressive. So, Melissa, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So why don't we start with, because it's not something you see on a business card every day, how did you become a retail experience expert, and what does that really mean?
To be honest, I came to it kind of as an experiment. I had left Wall Street wanting to pursue more creative endeavors, and a friend who became a new friend in 2009's family owns the Roger Smith Hotel. Mm-hmm. And he said, we're looking to do something experiential here. Do you want to partner with us? And it was just good timing. It was at a time in my life where I left Wall Street and I had an open mindset and a little bit of a nest egg. So we experimented. We experimented for 4 months. Brands paid me in clothes because we weren't sure what was going to work. And by that January, we were renovating. And from 2009 till today, I've really been entrenched day to day in the evolution of retail. Our clients range from emerging designers to fast-growing, well-funded, you know, e-commerce first brands that are looking to get into brick and mortar, but then also large publicly traded companies that are figuring out how do we become more innovative and stay up with these e-commerce first brands that are coming to brick and mortar. So that's kind of, I guess, how the expertise came to play, because for so many years, this is what we were doing day to day.
So what do you think makes pop-up retail experience so powerful for big brands and for little ones too, right? So we have intrapreneurs and entrepreneurs in our community. And, you know, from your experience and the hundreds that you've done, what's in it for them? Like, why does that feel and become so much more innovative and powerful than maybe traditional retail? Not that that can't be, but it's different.
Yeah, I think it's part of it's because consumers think of it differently. They walk into a pop-up store expecting to be surprised and delighted and educated and discover something that they could share on socials. And, you know, when they go into a traditional brick and mortar store or a permanent one, they usually already know what they're going for. And maybe they're looking to discover what's the new blouse that came in today, for example, but they probably already know the story. So that's really what I think feeds into it. And then, you know, with our generations now coming up, millennial, Gen Z, the expectations they're having there too is they want experiences they could share. You know, their highlight reel is the experiences in life. And so they get more attached to brands who can give that to them. And pop-up stores just, again, lend themselves to that.
So what do you think then, if I want to do a pop-up store, what do you think I need to think about to do it? What I'm trying to ask, and I'm not being very clear about it is, right, I could just take my store and make it a pop-up store, or take my online sales and make it a pop-up store, but it sounds like there's a lot more to it to make it something that I should engage in and that would make it successful.
Yeah, sure. So yes, you could do a pop-up store, but it does take a strategy. And our conversation always starts with what are your goals? Mm-hmm. So every brand wants to make sales, obviously, but a lot of those sales aren't confined to doors open, doors closed of a pop-up. It's what's going to happen in the next couple of quarters. Mm-hmm. So what are you looking to achieve in that pop-up? Are you looking to learn more about your customer? Do you have a product that has a higher level of education that's needed that you can't convey online? Are you testing a new partnership? Are you testing a new demographic, a new location? Do you have one new product line that's launched that's maybe a little different than what you've done in the past that you want to introduce in a very targeted conversation? And if you do that in a pop-up store, then you can build the whole story around that. So really want to dive into that first, and that will inform a lot of the other decisions.
So it sounds like, if I hear you right, that it's not just, I should say, a sales strategy, but it really is an experimentation strategy as well as all the other things it could be.
Absolutely. It's a very engaged, vocal focus group for your brand at the end of the day. I mean, there's so many touch points, and if you really create these moments that encourage engagement in store, you have so many opportunities to build your relationship with your customer and to learn more about them.
So here's my naive question, but I'm going to ask it anyway. Mm-hmm. Does a pop-up store have to be in a mall? Because we're shopping so differently today, right? So where, or in a pop-up experience is really probably what I should call it, right? So where can I do that and have a high impact? I guess it kind of depends on my strategy, but
it depends a bit on your goals and your target market, you know, what you're looking to test and learn, and some locations are going to make more sense than others. Yes, mall groups are much more open-minded now to pop-up stores, and they are proactively dedicating space for pop-up retail, but you're seeing it across locations. Airports are doing it now. There were a number of pop-up stores in Houston at the Houston airport during the Super Bowl.
Right.
So, but it could be a mobile pop-up where you're going from city to city. You can do a pop-in shop. Maybe you're not ready yet to take on your own store, but you can do a pop-in of a couple hundred square feet within an existing store where the customer alignment makes sense. So there's a lot of different forms in which it could take, and it's really just about what you want to achieve and somewhat about your budget, of course.
Yeah. So you've produced well over 100 of these. What do you think are the key things for making it work, for making it successful?
I think that there are a number of things. So once you've gotten past that goal conversation and really understanding your target, and what are you going to use the space for? Is it going to have inventory? Is it going to be a shoppable showroom? What other things do you plan to do in the space outside of just selling product? Do you plan on hosting events? I mean, all of that will impact the size space you need.
Right.
So you really want to think of that up front. And then you want to try to plan it out in enough time where you're not selling yourself short of planning all aspects of it. So it's the location, it's the design that's going to further tell your, you know, convey your brand's DNA and help you achieve those goals. But it's also what's going to be the marketing strategy for your store. And depending on what channels you're going to use, those take time to plan too. So is it traditional media outlets? Is it a social media campaign leading up to it? Are you going to want to plan in-store events with partners to keep the buzz going throughout the pop-up? One area that I feel a lot of people are surprised in how much money and time it takes is investing in your store staff.
Oh.
I think it's one of the number one reasons stores fall short when they're planning pop-ups, because that's kind of a last minute thought that they have.
Right.
They want to just get interns to do it or pay minimum wage kind of, but this is such an important touch point, right? And it has to further the whole mission of being in store, being live. It's telling your brand story, and they're an extension of that. So if you don't have the right people in place to tell your story, to talk about a product, to make people feel more inspired by what you're doing, then all the work that you did to plan up to open the door kind of falls short.
And then the experience falls completely short, right? Because they can't answer questions. They can't guide them to the right kind of through the journey of the store.
Exactly. And it's one of the most disappointing things for a customer. Yeah. You walk in, you're surprised, it's so cool, you want to learn more, and then they don't know.
Well, and it's so ironic, right? Because we kind of forget that the frontline staff are our brands.
Exactly.
But we see them as like, well, this is just staff. But
they're not. They're not just there to help the customer experience, but they're also there to help you learn too. So you want to make sure that they're conveying your brand visually in the right way. They can speak about it, but also they can come back at the end of each day and give you information. Who came into the store? How did they shop? What did they engage with? What questions did they have? So.
For big companies, I want to ask this for big and small. So for big companies, are you seeing them start to have retail, these pop-up experiences as part of their greater strategy? Because it seems like for a while there, it was kind of one-off, like, oh, I've got this new thing, so I'm going to do it. Are you finding it more kind of a bigger part of the strategy now?
I do. I mean, I am seeing it across the board from small, mid-sized to large businesses for different reasons. Mm-hmm. The larger ones, they tend to be a little bit more of a concept store where they're really highlighting something new and different. So I guess, for example, with the Amazon Go store, right?
Right, yeah.
It's all about that new technology that they're launching and mm-hmm. really educating people about that experience. So that the bigger brands tend to be more focused, where the smaller brands, it's your whole brand story. So, but there are differences in, you know, the larger brands have a bigger budget for technology right. integration that some of the smaller brands can't do. That said, they can still approach it with the mentality of data collection and learning from that and making new decisions from that.
So I don't know if you know Johnny Cupcakes, the lifestyle brand. Do you know the cupcake skull and crossbone, but it's a cupcake?
Oh,
so
no.
I love it. It's one of my favorite things. But I'm not the target market. I'm way too old. But I love watching his business. And one of the things that I've seen over the years from him, these pop-up experiences. So he came to Denver, this was a couple of years ago now, and he did a pop-up experience in a cupcake shop, because that's his logo, and the line was out the door to get it. It was like a rock concert. It was insane. So the whole thing was this incredible experience, like from start to finish, from the buzz marketing to people lining the streets to getting, you know, their cupcakes while they were buying clothing. I mean, it was just incredible. Music blasting into the street. So I'm curious, I share that because it made a lasting impact on me, clearly. It shows the power of pop-up experiences. Because he came and went, and then the next day I drove by and I'm like, oh, he's gone.
Yeah, the sense of urgency.
I'm just getting my t-shirt. But my question for you is, because it is such a creative endeavor at the end of the day, there's so much innovation in it. What's your process going from, you know, I pick up the phone and call you and say I want to do a pop-up experience to getting to the actual opening of it? Can we just walk us through the process for that?
Sure. Yeah. So the first ideation call really dives into those goals, dives into your target customer and us figuring out, you know, the inventory and all of that and budget. So those are kind of like the first four conversation pieces that we have. Once we've gone on to that, then we'll move on to a more formalized concept deck. So what's the story we're going to tell in the space? What's going to be your color palette? What are the materials? What are the elements, right, that we want to make sure that we're incorporating to tell that story? And that just becomes our guide.
Yeah.
And simultaneously, we'll probably start looking for space. Space takes more time, and every market's different. For turnkey spaces, like what we have at the Roger Smith Hotel, you know, we manage that calendar, and the goal of this program is to stay a revolving storefront. We're not looking to sign a long-term lease. So you could pre-book with us. Two of the four spaces already booked through the end of this year. Most of the time when you're going to just a raw space that's in between leases, a landlord's not going to say yes to you that many months in advance. You're lucky if they say yes 2 months in advance. Mm. But you want to kind of prepare as much as you can on the story ideation side so that you can move quickly once you sign that lease, because the floor plan obviously is going to determine what the flow of the space can be.
Right.
But if you have those elements ready and you understand, you know, what your key colors are, and is it wood and is it metal, and right, you can kind of bring that in and understand what you want to achieve in the space.
So I just want to dig into something you said, because I've heard it a couple of times. So I want to make sure I'm not being assumptive, because it sounds like a really important element. You keep talking about the story we're telling. Will you give us an example of what that looks like? What does it mean when you say story? How do you bring that to life?
The most important thing is that you can tell, you can be like, it needs to be a sound bite. What is the store? So we just recently opened Madison Reed's Color Bar. You understand what it is right away, right? You come in and it's like a dry bar, but for color.
Yeah.
25 minutes, $45, you get your roots done. Okay. So.
Wait, I'm sorry. Where was that? I could really use some help.
MadisonReed.com. No, I'm not. But we opened their first brick and mortar in New York in December. And so, you know, we also knew what the process had to be for her to go through the color bar experience. So we knew what elements it had to embody. The Marc Jacobs Tweed Shop, you understand thematically right away what it is. And it's intriguing enough. If a customer has to kind of think about what's going on and they don't totally get it, then there's not likely going to be an easy connection. So you want to really make sure, and the more specific the story, the better. Instead of it being a holiday store, it's the Nutcracker. You know what
right,
I mean?
Right. Yeah. Uh-huh. Well, holiday doesn't give you a good filter, does it? Because that can still be anything.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. I kind of cut you off in between there, but I wanted to clarify what that meant. Because I think it's as someone who came from a branding world, I think the story matters. I mean, that is your filter for everything else in a lot of ways, right?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Right.
So will you give us some examples of pop-up experiences gone wrong? Now, obviously, they're probably not yours, but you see a lot, right? So can you share a couple mistakes that you've seen out there that, you know, if I'm considering doing it, whether I'm large or small, that I should probably avoid because they suck.
Yeah. I mean, I won't name anybody, but.
That's very kind of you.
I think that internal alignment is really important. And I think that that's something that causes a lot of issues when that doesn't exist. Because most of the time you are working really fast to make a pop-up happen because you won't know well in advance if you have a location or not. And if the internal team isn't aligned on the design and the merchandising and the operational aspects, if all those departments aren't talking and on the same page, it makes it really hard logistically. Number one, it limits your options on what you can, on your timeline, because you're going back and forth and in circles, and then you might not have enough time to get the right fixtures that you wanted, and you're gonna have to compromise, or you're gonna have to pay rush fees, or all of these things. Also, if the merchandising and the marketing team aren't talking, we had an instance of a brand that did a shoppable showroom, and they created this really great experience for women to try clothing on, and people were loving it, but 3 out of 4 people who wanted to purchase on the desktop, because it was all, you know, you need to go to the screen after, 3 out of 4 people couldn't buy what they wanted because the merchandising department that was dealing with the online experience was disconnected from the in-store. Right.
And I'm sure that leaves a lasting bad impression on your customers too. That's just not a one-off.
Yeah, no, that, for sure, exactly. Yeah. So that communication is important for sure. Again, spending time training the staff, that's also a number one of the top 3 issues we see. Also, brands just taking on space because it's affordable or free and handed to them, and it's not really the right location, because there's a cost to everything. Time is cost, right, even if it's free. So, you know, those are some of the bigger mistakes that I've seen, and not really doing the research and thinking that a location makes sense because it has cachet. But if it's not relevant to your customer, who cares? We've tested Soho and Midtown in New York City for many brands, and people think of Soho and it's cool and has cachet, but many of them tripled their sales when they came to Midtown because that's where their target demo was.
Oh, during the day, that's where they're working.
They're working, and they're there 5 days a week, not 2.
Right.
So, you know, you really just really think about what makes the most sense for your brand.
So what are some of the goals that make sense? You know, I've heard you say things beyond sales, like, you know, you're launching something new, you're testing out a new product, you're testing out a partnership, I think was the other one you mentioned. What are some of those goals that, if I have those goals, perhaps pop-up experience is the right thing for me to consider?
Yeah, so those goals, so we said testing new location, so you could do A and B testing, like brands at Soho and then Midtown. You might have a new technology that you're integrating into your platform, and you want to make sure, you know, you want to see how that works, just testing that online, offline experience. You know, some brands have different sales models. So, for example, Jay Hilburn, their sales model are all their personal stylists. So their pop-up had two purposes. On the B2B side, it allowed them to onboard more personal stylists.
Oh.
Because they, you know, give them an opportunity to recruit. And then on the B2C side, stylists that existed could make appointments with customers, and they were able to upsell more because they were able to show them how they could style and layer pieces and things that, you know, they might not be able to understand as well online. Yeah. So that's another one. The Real Real did a pop-up with us last year, same kind of concept, because they have consigners, right? But then they also have people who buy. So people could learn about the consigning process, join, and then other people could shop. So it was a good way for them to test too. Did it resonate with both sides? What worked better than others? Was this a good, you know, avenue for us?
You know, I love what you're saying here, because, you know, so I'm in the space of innovation and thinking differently about things. And I love that, for what I'm hearing from you, if I hear right, is that you have a lot more room to play and experiment in this type of situation, because you're not signing a lease, because you're not committing to inventory beyond, you know, small, because you've got hopefully people on the ground who are maybe collecting research as well as dollars, if that's part of your goals, right? So it sounds like there's just a lot more room to play and maybe even try out new marketing ideas and new innovations that, you know, you're not ready to take to market because you don't know yet.
That's right. And I think depending on what you want to learn, I mean, large brands like a Marc Jacobs or Sally Hansen, we did their activations. To do a 4-day pop-up made a lot of sense because they already have a huge following that they can activate to come in store. Most of the time, it's not enough time for a brand to learn. So really think about the timeline that makes sense too. I like to recommend no less than a month, because it gives you time to learn. It gives you time week to week to see what changed. Did you re-merchandise the window and that impacted traffic? Did you, what patterns did you start to see with days of the week? And so giving yourself that time to be in there long enough to learn is important too.
So you said activation. So let's back it up a little bit to the marketing of it. So you throw up a pop-up somewhere that's right, and you've got these goals, you've got great people and an incredible experience and the right story, right? Everything works.
Yeah.
But how do you get people there? What are some of the things that you've seen or done that's really worked to help get the people, the traffic going?
Sure. So a lot of that will depend on what stage the brand is. For example, Marc Jacobs, what they did that was smart was it's a coveted brand. They launched their store during Fashion Week, where people want to be part of the Marc Jacobs conversation, but can't get in the runway show. And there was no barrier to entry. You know, it didn't matter how many followers you had. All you had to do was participate. You come in, you take a picture of something in the store, you post it with the hashtag, and you show the tweet counter that you did that, and that's how you paid with product.
God, that's great.
Simple. Wait,
did that, that just must have blown up all over.
It was viral. Of course. They kickstarted it with their influencers and celebrities.
Right.
So between already having a following, having those influencers, and it being so easy, it was a perfect mix. Other brands don't have those advantages. So you want to be strategic and think, okay, what traditional publications might make sense for me, and be really targeted and make sure you have all the assets prepared so you make the reporter's job as easy as possible.
Right.
Think about your social media strategy and what channel makes the most sense for who you're going after. Have teasers leading up, you know, start telling your newsletter following, this is coming, mark your calendar, make it feel special. Maybe your top shoppers get invited the first night and they become your ambassador.
VIP thing.
Exactly. Make them feel special. They're getting the first look. And think of that in-store event strategy, especially if you're there for a month, because your opening reception is going to be your friends and your family, and it's going to be packed, and you're going to feel on top of the world. Mm-hmm. And then there's the next week.
Yeah. So, you're like, where's everybody?
So, and there's a lot of ways you can do it. I mean, it's not always about quantity either. And it depends on the size of your space. One brand that we had that was so successful is she had a pretty good mailing list, and she would just target 25 women every Thursday and invited them for wine. Mm. And because it was so personal and they felt like they were with their friend, the designer, they 90% conversion rate on sales. They were all inspired to support her, and they felt it was a compliment to be invited. So there's that approach. Or maybe you partner up with organizations and brands that make sense. So if you sell professional dress wear, does it make sense to invite a group like Elevate or something, right? And you give them a night in, maybe you have a panelist and you serve wine and then all the women get 20% off that night, right?
So you give them a little added value.
Exactly.
It's kind of the 1-to-1,000,000 approach, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you really want to think of that. And for some products, you know, street marketing still makes sense too.
Yeah.
And sampling. And we did a pop-up for a flower client, roses. They sold roses. And we gave away roses at lunchtime with a little saying. And it was intriguing. And who doesn't want a rose? And then they came to visit the store to learn more. So there's a lot of ways that you can be creative, even if you don't have a huge budget.
And you probably made a lot of girlfriends and boyfriends very happy when they brought those roses home, I assume.
Yeah. Who's that from?
Yeah. Hey, wait a minute. Actually, there's two questions I want to ask. So the first one is, and you shared a lot of examples, so maybe you've already covered it, but do you have one or two that were just your absolute, you know, from a creative and success perspective, your favorite stories?
Sure. I have favorites for different reasons. Marc Jacobs will always be one. I also, we did one for Carbon 38. It's an athleisure brand based on the West Coast, and we did their store in the Hamptons this summer. It was their first brick and mortar, and they are so successful on the visuals on their site. They have such beautiful, inspirational lifestyle photography shots. They don't just use models; they're athletes, and their bodies are aspirational. And you see them in that clothes, and you're like, I'm going to wear that because I'm going to maybe look like that, right? So how do you bring that into a physical space?
Yeah.
How do you bring that messaging so that people really feel like they're walking into it? And so the bar was pretty high on an aesthetic standpoint, but we had only 6 weeks from the day we signed the lease to design and build it out, and a somewhat limited budget. So we were really crafty, and we found a space that had high ceilings, and it was kind of industrial and unfinished, and we put white strips along the bottom. It was really like gym meets beach lifestyle store. And they did better than break even, you know? So that was one that was great. And just to see women walk into such a brand that had such a coveted thought, like people, oh my gosh, this is here in person, you know? And they so that was fun. Penguin Random House, we did a pop-up with them in Puerto Rico. That will always be one of my favorites because I didn't realize that when Borders closed, that was one of their top two performing sales locations in North America.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Huh. So the void in that market for access to books is huge. There's little stores, and Amazon Prime there isn't like Amazon Prime here. So it's not like they're just going to order and get a book. And so Penguin partnered with local distributor to change that. And enable people who went to that bookstore to have full access to their library. And if it wasn't available in store, they'd ship it to them in 2 days. And, you know, we did it in a mall. We had to translate a space very quickly, a GameStop, into a store that was inspirational. So we made it an adventure store.
That's a big shift.
Yes, it was. We built it into an adventure store. We put zip lines from front to back and carabiners, and we hung books and, you know, with a big grass wall in the back and bungee cords. And because every book is an adventure.
Yeah.
And the amount of people that stood outside waiting for doors to open and the sheer joy that we saw on people's faces, like genuine joy to touch and feel and hold a book and books that they couldn't have access to. And we're talking from preteen to 80 years old.
Amazing.
And they sold a couple hundred books the first day. So that was great because it was disrupting a market a little bit by bringing in the technology. It was enabling distribution that didn't exist. And there was a storytelling aspect, but you know, you feel like you made a difference. So it was really nice.
That's really cool. So, you know, I know that I've no doubt you have tricks up your sleeve and things that you know that work. Yet on the other hand, each brand has its own vibe, right? Mm-hmm. And each company has its own goal. So where do you personally get your innovation, your inspiration from to be able to kind of bring those two together to come up with something amazing?
I am constantly reading and my team and I are constantly going to trade shows. We have our own running list of experiential stores that we like around the city. And so we're always the fourth quarter is a little hard because that's where the busiest, but you know, we try to go to trade shows, not just for design and fixtures and, but also technology and experience. And so between reading, going to conferences, seeing what others are doing. And also I think we're at a little bit of an advantage because our clients cross industries. So we work with food, we work with luggage, we work with mattresses, we work with apparel and fashion, we work with wellness. They all have different things that they bring to the table. And they're all a little bit innovative in different ways. So kind of bringing the best to other industries is great. And that's really helpful as well. And I'm always on Pinterest and Instagram and all that.
I appreciate you said that though, because I'm in the same boat. I work with, you know, everyone from healthcare to libraries to CIO groups. And I actually love it because something that I've learned over here, I can apply in some way over here. And I think that just naturally makes you a little more innovative because you're just connecting so many different, you have so many dots to connect at the end of the day. So it's very cool that you work across a lot of industries.
Yeah, it's interesting because what the sneaker industry is doing, there's some air, like they're so advanced in certain things versus, you know, food. And so it's, yeah, it always keeps it interesting for us.
Who do you think are the most advanced in that, just from being innovative and out on cutting edge of how to deliver product? And you said apparel, you said shoes, right?
I do think the sneaker industry stays ahead of that. I think, you know, they sell aspiration. Which probably helps. And, you know, the Nikes of the world have big, deep pockets. So that helps too, but also the product. So for example, 3D printing, it doesn't translate for everybody, but if I can 3D print and customize the sole of my sneaker, that makes a ton of sense, right?
So cool.
Right. So I think I do think the food industry is starting to get a lot more innovative in how they're approaching selling product. Even the supermarket industry is.
Yeah.
So an Amazon Go will probably push that a lot, but, and I think the beauty industry, like the Sephora's of the world are really getting savvy with integrating technology to educate and understanding that there's this opportunity to really grow a relationship with you, to be your friend. If you see them as the partner in your life to help them find the right shades for your complexion, and also remember how they helped you. So they have, you know, recorded mirrors now. So if you work with a consultant who does your makeup, it takes little snippets and then it emails it to you. So you remember how you contoured your skin and how you made your eyes look bigger. And right.
So they rocked my world. I did not know they did that. And I love Sephora, but every time I go to get any makeup anywhere and then I go home and I look like a clown and I'm like, how do they do that?
But if they make you feel more confident that once you take it home, you could still do it yourself, then you're going to be more open-minded to experimenting.
Yeah, that is brilliant. I did not know. I haven't been in. I've become an online shopper, so I did not know that they do that. But I will be back into Sephora now. So little plug for them. Melissa, this has been so great. A couple last questions. First of all, what advice do you have for anyone who's listening to this in our community or watching and thinking, "Oh, pop-up really needs to be part of my strategy"? What's something they need to be thinking about or doing just to take that initial step?
Yeah, I think think about. Think about why you think it should be part of your strategy. Think about where. So some of the advantages you have as an online company is, where is your strongest market? I would start there.
Because you know.
Right? So, and then if you sell something, what's your strongest season? It will bias data a little bit. Obviously, we did our pop-up for a rose client in February. It's going to bias data because it's Valentine's Day. But also you're getting to activate when your audience is going to be the most captive.
Yeah. I was going to say when they're actually caring about your product, because why go after them when they're actually not even in the mindset of your product?
Exactly. And I would say steer clear of December unless you already have a following, because at that point people are either looking for sales or they're probably buying brands they already know.
Right. That is, I'm just going to pause there and say, that's a great piece of advice. I know many entrepreneurs who want to take advantage of the holidays by doing a kiosk or a pop-up, but it is crowded and you kind of forget how crowded it is. So that's great. Thank you for bringing that up. That was great. Okay, good. So where can people connect with you? How can they learn more, reach out, follow you?
Sure. We're very active on socials. My handle is at Mels Styles, M-E-L-S. STYLES, or at Lionesque Group. And then you can email us through our website as well, lionesquegroup.com. And we're pretty responsive.
Excellent. So last question is, what's one thing people would be surprised to learn about you, a personal hobby, passion, experience that would make me go like, what?
I mean, I guess I'm not as much anymore as a new mom, but I'm more adventurous than people would think. I have a scuba diving license, a motorcycle mm-hmm. license, and I've skydived with my dad sometimes.
What?
So that's
I have so many questions right now, particularly about the skydiving.
Amazing. You have to do it.
Okay. I'm dying to do it and I've never done it. And it's on my list. But so are you doing tandem? Is it?
You have to do tandem until you're either training to be licensed or licensed. So my dad is licensed and his friends are, and they do formations, and I will never jump with him as a tandem. I don't think it's a good idea, but I go tandem. Where I go, it's usually like ex West Point or military guys that are.
Yeah. Okay. My last question on it is that moment before you jump off the plane the worst? Like what is the scariest of all the moments in that?
You know, the first time I jumped, I was with my mom, and for her, it was that. her guy was like, we're just doing it. But it's different. It's not like when you go in a roller coaster and you go down the big slope and your stomach comes up and there's like a disconnect with your brain about what's really happening because you're so far up in the sky.
Because you can't freaking imagine it.
Well, if you're 14,000 feet in the air, you don't see the ground. So it's different. It's a surreal, holy shit, like what is my body doing moment.
Yeah.
But, and then it happens so fast, you free fall for just a minute, which seems like 10, and you're going so fast. You have to remember to keep your mouth closed, which I didn't do the first time, and then you're... But what I would say is if you do it, invest in the video, because the video that you take after is everything.
Oh my God.
But you feel safer. I felt safer seeing somebody in front of me. I was like, okay, he's okay. I'm okay.
Right. I was actually on my list truly on my list of things to do. So, and I tried to ask my dad to do it, but he was in the Israeli military. So I called him and I was like, Abba, do you want to jump with me? And he's like, I used to jump in enemy territory. Like, why would I pay someone? And I was like, come on.
But if he's licensed, it's really inexpensive. I think they, at least here, it's only $20 if you're jumping on your
awesome.
Own.
So this has been a pleasure. Thank you so much. That was great. I think that was great insight, not just to pop-up experience, but really how to think about how to bring your brand to market in a way that really builds that relationship and is meaningful. And that really is beyond just the product on the shelf or a website with your service.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Well, if anybody has any questions, I'll be online and let me know if you go skydiving.
I will.
Thanks for hanging out with us inside Launch Street. When you're ready to take your game to the next level, join the thousands of others that are upping their innovation edge on GoToLaunchStreet.com, the top online education resource and community platform for innovators looking to use innovation to get measurable results. GoToLaunchStreet.com.